Hi, I'm Jerry Boyer. Thank you for listening to Business in the Kingdom on the Edify Podcast Network. My guest today is Tom Strobar. Tom is a financial advisor. You know, that's his day job. But what he's done with his day job as someone with expertise in finance is to spend decades fighting for the sanctity of life, among other aspects of a Christian moral ethic, in finance with America's largest corporations. And I know many people in the past year or two, I think the Disney debacle was a trigger event for a lot of people who have woken up to the fact that a lot of these corporations are not on your side, and they're not on nobody's side. They're on the other side. Well, Tom saw this, you know, more than two decades ago and has been fighting the good fight. And first of all, I think there's a lot we can learn from him. And second of all, this is somebody whose story should be known, so we can thank him for the work that he was done while the rest of us were sleeping. So Tom Strobar, thank you for joining us for Business in the Kingdom.
Thank you, Jared. It's great to be here.
What got you started and when did you get started?
I really got started in 1989. There was a abortion clinic with about 100 yards of my house that specialized in late term abortions, run by a doctor, Martin Haskell. And, you know, in the paper, other thing, we'll do abortions up to 24 weeks and probably wink thereafter. So I really first got started by picketing, or as I like to call it, witnessing before the clinic, walking with a sign, give life a chance kind of thing, kind of a Beatlesque illusion. And I was reading a kind of a boring magazine called Business Week, but it noted in there where Pillsbury had gotten 5,000 negative letters over their contributions to Planned Parenthood. I'm in the investment business. I do a lot of individual company stock, and that's where I, you know, been trained at, and you know, been, that's my entire financial career. And I know a little bit about what makes corporations tick. I'd been involved in lawsuits against corporations who were abusing shareholders. So I became a shareholder in Pillsbury, wrote them a letter as a shareholder, which actually gives me a kind of a legal connection that I theoretically could sue them. Mm-hmm. And just most of it was educational, but also noted that, you know, this could be a situation where a shareholder might sue them. And also noted people are, some people might be pleased with their gifts to Planned Parenthood, but X number of folks weren't. You know, they acknowledged the thousands of negative letters they got, which is, that's harmful to me as a shareholder. And so I saw that and was encouraged. And then I did some research on my own, the old-fashioned way, and dug up approximately 30 different companies, with public companies, publicly traded companies. And most of these were, you know, larger companies, became a shareholder. Now, actually, I have to laugh a little bit. I actually bought two shares at each one of these companies so I could speak honestly in the plural.
Right. You don't want to violate the commandments, yeah, right? You don't want to bear false witness, ninth commandment, right?
Yeah. So I bought two shares.
So we oppose.
We oppose, and my shares with an S at the end. And again, educated about Planned Parenthood, you know, that they should be sensitive to what I call that the assets of the corporations are the fruit of all the employees' labor. They belong to all the shareholders, and they should be sensitive to the fact that these are abortions, a very controversial issue. I shouldn't have to tell people that. And, you know, pay some attention to the fact that the other people on the pro-life side do exist. And I got various responses. Some were, you know, thank you, Mr. Strobar. And I say, go jump in a lake. You know, and they make excuses, oh, for teen pregnancy education or something like that. Of course, money's fungible. Only, you know, they cash your check.
Right.
I got carefully worded letters from legal departments, which you could just read between the lines, that they were chilled enough to that I'd be surprised if they'd ever give again. And some of them never did. And it was kind of funny because I mentioned AT&T, I didn't get a letter from them, and I'd already seen their response. There's one of these teen pregnancy education things, and I forgot about it.
So just to be clear, you're saying that they write back and say, well, we're not giving for abortions, we're giving for teen pregnancy education. Or then later on, it was breast cancer screenings. Even though they don't have any mammogram machines in any Planned Parenthood clinic, but we're giving for that, not the messy, bloody abortion stuff, right?
That's
your point is it's one budget, right? Yeah. A dollar to Planned Parenthood is a dollar to Planned Parenthood.
That's correct.
Right.
And they're in that business. Everyone knows it. And, you know, you can't separate those dollars out. And so they were certainly guilty. And then later I did get a response from AT&T saying that, you know, we're going to stop giving money to Planned Parenthood. And others, in fact, I actually had a phone call. This was a late Friday afternoon from the chairman of a company called Lubrizol, which is...
Can we stick with AT&T for a moment?
Yeah, sure.
Let me finish out your story.
Okay.
Last year, I contacted AT&T over abortion funding because I had heard what you had done, but I wanted to know whether they stuck to the straight and narrow. So I contacted investor relations and she said, well, gee, I don't know. And I said, well, how can we find out? There's got to be a way to find out. And it was really interesting. She said, well, I'm an employee, so I can just go into the system and say, I'd like to make a grant to Planned Parenthood and will you match it? And because there's a list, they have a database, and it didn't come up matched. So your work has continued. They still do not match grants to Planned Parenthood from employees.
I didn't know. And that's one I actually have been somewhat accommodating on, and that most of those are, shall we say, modest, the $50 to $100 type thing. And a lot of corporations are nervous about excluding, but that's great. That's great news. I'm semi-shocked.
You know, what might be interesting is, I know you can't probably list them now, but you send me a list of the ones who said, okay, we're done funding Planned Parenthood. And then I can look at where I've got a shareholder interest and follow up and say, are you still not funding Planned Parenthood? Let's see if they stuck to it.
Yeah, that's a possibility. And we have the life decisions, we let them off the hook if it's just employee matching gifts. And there are organizations that do include them.
Right.
But we don't see that as, we wish it didn't happen.
Yeah, you don't like it, right? But it's not a deal breaker.
It's not a deal breaker. No,
all right,
if the company says they won't, we won't do it.
So the way I've talked to them is, okay, if you'll match a grant to Planned Parenthood, do you also match grants to pro-life groups? If you match grants to Planned Parenthood and you don't match, to a mom's house or a pro-life center, then you really are taking sides as opposed to just employee matching. A lot of them they'll match both ways. So, you know, that seems unobjectionable. It's the employee making the decision. Again, I don't like it, but you can understand it's an employee decision. Okay, so you mentioned Pillsbury. You were starting to tell a story about another company before I interrupted you to update AT&T.
Lubrizol, and I got a physical call from the chairman of Lubrizol on a Friday afternoon. Now, I'd sent out 30 of these things, so I kind of half forgot. And he goes, hi, this is Wes Coleman, chairman.
You sent
Lubrizol
out 30 proposals or letters?
Letters.
These okay.
Were just
so you were not yet to
letters.
The point of, I'm going to put this on the proxy. All right,
right,
30 letters. Got it.
So the chairman calls me back and I didn't hear his name. I didn't recognize his name. And he goes, I'm, you know, chairman of Lubrizol. I'm like, oh, okay. Hi, Les. And first he tried to qualify me a little bit. He goes, well, we don't see your name on our shareholder list. Well, and I said, well, that's because it's in my IRA. It's held in the street name and therefore you don't see it. And then he said, well, how many shares do you own?
Both
and of course, thoughts fly.
I own both of my shares.
there's temptations, and I was tempted to lie, but then I realized there's a SEC rule that as long as you own 5% or less, you don't have to tell the company how many shares you own. And I reminded him of that rule, and we kind of clarified where I stood. I didn't have to tell him the fact that I only own 2 shares. And we had a back and forth discussion. He said, well, that's the foundation. That's not the company. And the guy that runs the foundation is really a great guy. And I said, well, look, you know, let's don't make decisions.
Except for the dead babies. He's a really great guy, except for the baby killing.
Yeah, except for the baby killing part.
Right, he's a wonderful fella. Yeah.
Let's go out and have a beer or something.
Yeah.
But we went back and forth, and he finally said, look, I'm not going to tell you we'll never, ever give money to Planned Parenthood. And they were giving $35,000 a year. He says, but I'm going to call the guy up the foundation. I'm going to tell him I don't want to deal with these problems anymore. And I said, great, you can get back to work and I can get back to work. Maybe we retire someday. And they never gave again. So, you know, it obviously worked. And, you know, it was an interesting phone call.
Now, we're up against another challenge because I think the new rules for 990s, is it 990s for charitable? They don't have to disclose where they're giving anymore. That's maybe 2 or 3 years old. So we got to find out a way to find out what they're giving to. And I think some of these resolutions that call for them to disclose charitable contributions would be a step in the right direction.
That's basically my most recent iteration of shareholder resolutions calling for full disclosure.
Right.
Now, some companies actually do. I mean, I think Duke Energy was like 260 pages of contributions, some of the $50 range, some of the $50,000 variety. But, really, they should tell people this is supposed to create goodwill. They should, post this everywhere to let everybody know how wonderful and generous they are. So and the SEC has been fairly accommodating with that kind of logic. I mean, when I filed a shareholder resolution, I did one against JP Morgan Chase here a couple of years ago. They hired outside legal counsel to do everything they could to keep me away from the meeting. And I had 30 pages to the SEC why Tom Strobar should not be allowed to show up.
Was this their no action letter?
Yeah, right. Yeah. Then I got they got a no action letter from the SEC, which effectively saying, no, you got to put it on. So I got on there and I had back and forth discussions with their legal counsel who were verbally telling me, actually, this. In that case, I was challenging it on their gifts to the Southern Poverty Law Center that, hey, that was a one-time thing. It's not going to happen again. And I said, well, you put it in writing that it's not going to happen again. I'll withdraw it. Well, first they wouldn't. So I showed up. That was actually a Zoom annual meeting. I think I certainly chilled them by giving the Southern Poverty Law Center and maybe a few others just because they spend some time and energy. I mean, it had to cost them tens of thousands of dollars in legal bills.
Right.
To hire outside legal counsel.
Yes. So you brought up something interesting, which is I don't see you on my shareholder list, which means that a lot of times people own the shares, but they might own the shares through a fund, a mutual fund or an ETF, in which point you don't have a vote now. You're not a shareholder in Lubrizol if you own a mutual fund that owns that. Now, maybe investor relations will take your call, maybe they won't, but they don't really have to deal with you if you're owned through a fund, right?
But that's correct. Right.
Yeah, okay. So we need to gear up on how to deal with these funds. That's an interesting issue. But you might own it flat out. Okay, so it's in your name. They look at their list from Broadridge. Tom Strobar owns 2 shares, who cares? I think you're pointing out, if it's owned through something like an IRA or a 401k, then they won't have your name. They won't know who you are.
Yeah, most people have their shares held at a brokerage firm. They don't have the old-fashioned paper certificate. That's almost ancient history. So they don't really get they're not going to really know for sure because it's held through a nominee name. And in some sense, as I kind of pointed out, whether you own 2 shares or 2,000, you're still a shareholder. Now, the SEC's upped the dollar amount of shares you have to own to file shareholder resolutions the last couple of years, unless you're grandfathered in at, it used to be $2,000 worth. And if you owned it a year or more, you could file a resolution. Now you have to have a $2,000 plus level, you have to have owned it 3 years or more. Otherwise, it's like 25 right. grand.
25 grand for 1 year or...
Yeah, right. To eliminate guys like myself and others who might
So if you're reaching out to investor relations, you probably don't have to prove that you're a shareholder, right? You can say IRA, 401k, whatever. But if you want to get into the meeting, you've got to give them a control number, right?
I got to get a letter from the brokerage firm that holds the shares testing the fact that I've held the shares for 1 year. I actually have to get an affirmation from the brokerage.
For a resolution.
For a resolution, that's correct. Otherwise,
At an annual meeting, then you don't need that much. I mean, if you're for the annual meeting, I think you just have to own as of the record date, which is a couple of weeks before, right? So
yeah. Typically, at annual meetings, some require that you actually apply for a ticket firsthand. But any shareholder with 1, 2, 3 or more shares can get into an annual meeting and ask impertinent questions.
Or you can log on. Right.
Or these days, yes. And the new annual meetings, many are Zoom.
And I've logged on to scores of them. And all it took me was a control number. That's it.
Yeah.
Right.
And
if you're the shareholder and you're getting those proxies in the mail or via email, then they'll give you the control number. Or if the broker has it, then you can say, hey, broker, send that to me. I think a lot of people didn't want to deal with it. It's just like a bunch of paper. And they thought, I'll just have my broker or my advisor deal with it. But the brokers and the advisors, they don't really deal with it. It's not a money issue for them. They're generally not engaging with these companies. And so we're not functioning as shareholder citizens because the system isn't making it easy for us to do that. The system doesn't seem to be designed to make it easy for us to engage with these companies. You see what
I'm
saying?
That's correct. It's a hassle. Let's face it. And although these days the Zoom thing, you can do it from your living room. I live in Ohio. If I go to a Chevron meeting, that's 3 days of time and a grand of my dimes to get there.
I like the logins. I'm happy with that part of it. I'm just saying that you gotta if it takes a little work. Now you've done the work. And once you know how to do it, you know how to do it. Now I've done it hundreds and hundreds of times, right? So I know how to, but most people don't. And we need to fix that. We need to make it so that people can do this, so that the silent majority can be heard.
You're listening to the Edify Podcast Network. We'll be right back. This podcast is part of the Edify Podcast Network. Edify is a faith-inspiring app that brings together thousands of the best Christian podcasts in one place for your listening enjoyment. Cut through the noise and grow your faith by diving into the world's top Christian podcasts today. Download the Edify app for free from the App Store or Google Play, or by going to edify.app. That's edifi.app. This is the Edify Podcast Network. Welcome back.
All right, my dreams for the future, we'll leave that aside. Let's go back to your story. So you, Pillsbury, Lubrizol, AT&T, Chevron. We've talked about this. You've told me the Chevron story, and you wrote an editorial about it, an article about it. But I'd like my listeners to hear about, how you got Chevron to stop funding Planned Parenthood.
Yeah, Chevron was giving about $26,000 a year. I forget what the specific supposed purpose was. And had been persistent at it. And so I said, well, it's time for a shareholder resolution. I coordinated with Greg Cunningham in California, and one of his claims to fame, he makes the kind of the gruesome pictures of aborted children, et cetera, those very disturbing pictures. And so he was going to protest outside, had big, 6-foot by 8-foot signs of these pictures around the Chevron headquarters. And I was going to show up and pull out a banner with a severed head of an unborn child and a severed head due to the ISIS folks at the annual meeting. When they have to give me 3 minutes to present my resolution. I can say whatever I want. They have to sit there and listen.
You say 3 minutes?
Some don't make it 2, but it's enough. They usually don't. They're not going to tackle you at the microphone.
So I just want to make something clear. People don't realize this. If you put a proposal on the ballot, you can speak to everybody for 3 minutes.
That's correct.
There's a lot of persuasive ability there. Like a little leaven, a little of the leaven of the kingdom can go a long way in 3 minutes. So I don't think people realize they have the ability to do that.
Yeah, no, and I've sat up to talk to Bill Gates and Warren Buffett and Howard Schultz at Starbucks. And they all got to sit there and listen, and whether they like it or not. And you never know what kind of reaction they get from that. But the point is, at least somebody's standing up and challenging them on these kinds of things.
Yes.
But I got in the Chevron meeting, and there's usual liberal religious groups there hammering on them for fracking and things like that. Then I got up, did my pro-life thing, and you know, sat down, and I noted that the pictures were disturbing. I said, "We're adults here, but that's your money's going to fund this kind of activity. Let's don't, you know, this is the not so nice part of Planned Parenthood." And the chairman noted, "Well, looks like we have someone here who doesn't like who we give our charitable contributions to." And within months' time, the confirmation email was that, you know, they had no plans to give in the future. And they had verbally told me that prior to the meeting in hopes that I would not show up. Mm. And again, I challenged them, "You give it to me in writing and I'll go. Because I had like three conversations with two other attorneys at a time. And finally, you know, I got on, I showed up, and they took my phone away when I walked in, took my papers away. Now, luckily, I had my disturbing banner stuffed in the back, my back pants, you know, under my suit coat, and pulled it out, much to their surprise, I'm sure. But that was kind of fun.
So how did you feel about that? Because, you know, I mean, it gives off a little bit of a crazy vibe. Did you kind of feel like that? Like, I don't know whether I should do this or not. Or I've always had ambiguous feelings about the gruesome. I've been to pro-life marches, like not marches, but like protests. Right. And it's like, is this helping or not? I don't judge people for doing it because it is arresting. It is an arresting image.
Right.
But I don't know. Just have you done a lot of gruesome pictures or?
No,
is that-
That's where Greg Cunningham's claim to fame, and he's not the least bit bashful about it. I thought, well, I'm going to do it. You know, again, this was a room full of adults. We didn't have six-year-olds going by.
A good point.
So I mean, you know.
And it is happening. I mean, these aren't made up pictures. This is an airbrush. They're decapitating babies, right? Like ISIS is decapitating Coptic Christians, and they're decapitating babies. And the world is horrified with some decapitations, and other decapitations are healthcare.
Yeah, and that's kind of brings it home. So I thought I did it, and whether that was the coup de grace, if you will, I'm not sure, but they stopped giving. And, you know, I had a brief conversation with a nun afterwards who I asked her if she ever thought about doing a pro-life shareholder resolution. She said, "No, I haven't." And then she assured me that opposing fracking was pro-life. And I just smiled.
She's a nun. What are you going to do? Right?
Yeah.
You're going to get into a shouting match with a nun, you know?
Yeah, and actually, before the meeting, I asked her to pray for me. I could tell she was a nun. I said, "It's just," and I thought, she probably like, "Why is this guy asking me to pray for him?" But she's okay, I will. And but it's really very sad because they have a lot of, you know, they carry a lot of religious respect. I'm Tom Strobar the Kook, the nut, whatever they want to call me. I'm not Sister So-and-so or Reverend So-and-so. And, you know, so they are deferred to, and at sometimes these annual meetings.
And they kind of use up that credibility, you know, a little bit for these leftist causes. I mean, I've sat through a lot of these meetings. A lot of times it's a nun pushing an ideological hard left position. And I've never heard any of them take up, say, anything that would be considered like a traditional Catholic moral code issue.
Not even
pornography, which there is overlap, right, between progressives and conservatives. I've never even heard one say, "Let's get rid of the porn. It's fracking, it's supply chain, it's essentially the liberal agenda, never the conservative Catholic agenda."
Yeah, I actually did one in 2001, just by coincidence, with AT&T. I was challenged in the phrase sexual orientation. And for the first time, first and only time, the Religious Alliance Against Pornography, which was headed by a Catholic bishop or cardinal, filed a shareholder resolution on pornography. Now, I'd actually done one back in 94. So this is 7 years later, they sort of got it. "We're going to try it." Well, afterwards, I went up to their representative and I congratulated him on trying on the porn issue. And I said, "But hey, they've been selling porn for years." And I said, "Where were you last year?" And he said, "We, the Religious Alliance Against Pornography, couldn't agree on what porn was." And I had a kind of strange reaction because I remember just looking him in the eye and just walking away. Just, you know, I mean, if the devil gets good people to do nothing, I'm sure he's a good person. You know, they certainly did up until that year, and they never did it again.
Yeah.
And it was just a strange kind of experience that, you know, gee, we had trouble deciding what porn was. When the chairman's up there and it's kind of perverse, he goes, okay, we sell level 2 porn, but we don't sell level 3 porn. And I'm like, gee, I never heard the level stuff.
But load up on the level 2 porn. That's fine.
Yeah,
says the Religious Coalition Against Pornography. Yeah. I'm reminded of this at Corruptia Optissimi Pessimi, the corruption of the best is the worst. It's an old Latin proverb.
Yeah, nice Latin. Yeah.
Yeah. I see we Proddies can do it too. You know, it's not just you Catholics with the Latin. So I noticed, you know, looking at the proxy service that I work with, they have a Catholic social guidelines for proxy voting. The language on pornography is extremely tame. It's level 2 versus level 3, and it never says stop doing it. They never say stop doing porn. It's all about just labeling it accurately. So that's it. The Catholic moral agenda on pornography is just down to make sure that you say it's porn before you sell it. I mean, that's a moral collapse that's pretty deeply disturbing to me.
Until 2008, the Catholic guidelines on investments by the bishops didn't even mention pornography. They mentioned things like landmines and all kinds of other stuff, and South Africa this. It actually was, as long as it was a significant part. And actually, one of the advisors to them is the Christian Brothers Investment Services, who didn't have a porn policy for years, and then it was 50%. As long as your revenues were under 50% from porn, it was okay to invest in it, which is absurd. And it wasn't until 2015 that the bishops actually changed their guidelines, saying you're not supposed to own porn.
Got it. By the way, this might be an area where we disagree. My view here is liberty of conscience meets sacrifice to idols when it comes to the screening process, but engage is the imperative. In other words, if you own, I don't have any problem with someone owning Verizon or Comcast. Now, I understand that pornography is part of their revenue stream. But my understanding of Christian moral theology, including Catholic moral theology, is you're not participant in it as a third party secondary vote. So like if you have a conscience issue, don't, right? But it's not a moral imperative to not invest in a company where some of the asset or some of the revenues come from illicit activity if you're not directly, you know, participating in it. So, you know, so to me, something like an Ave Maria fund is like, yeah, sure, go ahead. Like, if you want to express your conscience that way, that's fine. But I've seen a lot of people sort of making it legalistic, like you are sinning. If you are investing in a company and that company gives money to Planned Parenthood, you're participating in an abortion. And I don't know any Catholic social theory, I'm talking about conservative Catholic social theory, that would make that leap. So my view would be you follow your conscience on that, but for Pete's sake, almost literally, you know, talk to them, try to stop them. If you own a share, use your authority, which is what you've been doing.
Yeah. And of course, kind of prior to the moral arguments, as a shareholder, you're promoting and profiting from whatever a company does.
Yes, you are. That's right.
Yeah.
Is it a sin to profit from something that is sinful? I would say it isn't. Jesus got meals from, you know, tax collectors and prostitutes. He received gifts of nard. He received, you know, well, maybe we don't need to get into this debate because our common ground is you're never going to screen out all the sins. So what are you going to do with the company you own? Right.
Yeah. That gets back to if you know that you can do something, at least try. And there's where there's been a lack of effort by religious groups. I mean, there's never been a religious group of any denomination, to my knowledge, that has ever done a pro-life shareholder resolution. Mm-hmm. So, you know, and almost again, all the activity by religious groups is on liberal social issues.
And I'm noticing, what is it, the Interfaith Center on Corporate Responsibility, mm-hmm. I'm seeing conservative evangelicals touting this group. And in their last two, I'll have to double check this, at least one of the last two of their proxy guidelines, they were promoting pro-abortion shareholder resolutions. So I don't understand I think it's maybe people just aren't reading the fine print. They're not getting into the details. I think maybe they don't know that this group that they're involved with is actually promoting abortion. And that's kind of, a lot of it is secrecy. A lot of this agenda is done in secret.
Yeah, I think so. And, you know, they've been pretty open in the past that, gee, if we covered pro-life issues, this place would blow apart. Some phrase like that they once told me.
Yeah.
And of course, you know, at some point you got to lay down where you believe or where you don't believe.
Well, and what happens? We're not going to take sides. And then now they have. They've taken the wrong side.
They have taken sides.
So once the power shifts so that they can get what they want, all of a sudden the not taking sides and let's be at unity thing goes out the door. All right. So what do you see? What's on your agenda now? It's time now to be thinking about next year.
Yeah.
I think we're going to see a lot of abortion resolutions now because of the blessing of Dobbs. Is going to bring a lot. They lost in the courts. They've lost in the state legislatures. They're going to try to win in the boardroom. Do you see that too?
Oh yeah, I think so. I think they're going to try. Although it's not easy to get a resolution on. You have to know the kind of parameters and the objections they will raise. And one of them is like ordinary business decisions. Now I'm going to couch my, I'm going to file one certainly at Kroger's and maybe others this year. And it'll be couched in one dealing with charitable contributions, but I think it'll be pretty clear to anybody reads it that what I'm going to also try to address is that corporations should be sensitive to shareholders, employees, et cetera, who are pro-life, and also not do things that turn off tens of millions of customers when they take these pro-abortion stances. So I'll wait to see what the pro-aborts bring forth, but corporations don't like their resolutions either.
That's true. Management is tired of resolutions from the left and the right.
True.
So maybe we can team up with management to fight some of these pro-abortion resolutions.
Well, yeah, maybe. But we can do things. It's not that hard. It takes some effort and a little bit of knowledge. But, you know, I'm working with some right now, and I just asked him, he owns enough shares of Kroger to do it. And I'll walk him through it. I'll send him the paperwork. He signs it. He forwards it, and it'll get done. And we could do that certainly on more. And in this day and age, you know, you don't need it to show up the annual meeting. You can do it on Zoom half the time.
Yes, right. I happen to think next year is going to be the high watermark of actual biblical, faithful Christian engagement with corporations, more than we've ever seen.
I hope so. Yeah, the movement.
We're awake now. We're awake now.
Yeah.
You were awake in 1989. The rest of the family, the Christian family, woke up last year, but we're awake now.
Yeah, that's great. I'm encouraged. You know, the future looks bright, and we've got lots of work to do.
We do. So, Tom Strohbar, thank you for the bright past, and your bright present, and your bright future. And I just want to say, this is the person who's been doing it long before anybody else, who's done more than anybody. Again, without renown, without payment. You know, this is just something you've done out of, you know, moral conscience. And so, you know, well done, faithful servant. Of course, that doesn't matter when it comes from me. But I would not be surprised if you heard it from our Lord and Master, who cares about the unborn, and says that to do it to the least of these, my brethren, you've done it to me.
Great expression.
Thank
That's
you.
Great.
All right, Tom Strohbar, financial advisor and pro-life corporate activist, thank you for being with us on Business in the Kingdom.
Appreciate it. Thank you.